Are we ready? Are we ready to begin? Are we ready, AGP? Fabulous. Probably would be good if I have my agenda open, huh? Yeah, could I just for a second? So I know the right thing. All right, I'd like to call this meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board to order. And if you would all please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. So my tiny thought for today is not so much a story as just a kind of thought-provoking statement. Trust is like an eraser. It gets smaller with every mistake. All right. We are going to have, we do have a quorum here today. We are missing Director Wharton. And I learned that little tidbit at a CSDA conference one year, so. Thought it would be good to use it. We do have. I would like to ask for the board's concurrence on putting the item on the TDC development first, so that we can get Mr. Bowman in and out. Yep. If that's okay, is that okay with? Is that fine. All right with you, fine Mr. With Gruber?
Me. Yeah, it's fine.
Absolutely.
And I think it's probably okay with you. All right. Then let's get started on the first item. We are going to have public comment. Make sure you please have silenced your electronic devices. And if you would like to make comment, we will take comment on each agenda item following the staff report. Because this is a special meeting, there is no open public comment period, only items on the agenda. So I just want to make that clear. The slips are in the front room if you haven't been here before, and you just need to fill one out and provide it to Ms. Madrid. All right, so let's start with the, agenda.
Thank you, 3B. Madam President and you. Board members. I'm going to introduce it, then District Council Tim Carmella, go ahead and discuss it a little bit. This is the second time, really, this item has been in front of you. It's 3B, and it's discussion and consideration to approve real property transfer agreement with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County for the transfer of three lots. And as you indicated earlier, we do have Daniel Bowman here with the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy. Thank you.
Madam President, members of the board, this item was continued from last Thursday's meeting, as you'll recall. It's the proposed transfer of three lots located on Dovedale pursuant to the MOU we entered into with the Land Conservancy in June of 2017. There were a couple of issues I think the board wanted to investigate. One was the location of the lots, and I marked the assessor's parcel map. That's the last page of this agenda item. And then the other item involved a couple of maintenance issues related to the lot, and that was the existence of three dead or dying trees and the fact that the property hadn't been weed abated this year, and the costs associated with that were a concern, I think, of the board's. So I was directed to talk to Daniel about that. We did have a discussion. He can certainly elaborate on it. What I got out of the discussion was the owners probably are not going to be willing to take care of those problems. And as a result, I think you're going to have to grapple with it, absorbing those costs ourselves. Daniel did indicate that he may be able to expedite transfer of the $3,000 we get annually, I think for 3 years. For another year, we'll get it, so that we'd have funds to address the maintenance issues. I don't know whether that's going to do anything, but it was something. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Daniel Bowman's here to address the issues as well, and turn it back to you.
Thank you for that. Because we changed the order, I want to make sure. Is there anybody here to speak on this item besides Mr. Bowman? Are there questions from board members? Director Pearson?
I've got a question for legal counsel. Do we not usually get the legal description and that stuff?
I do. I apologize. I do have the legal description, and I can probably hand it to you. It's references to lots and maps.
Right.
And I apologize if that's what you actually wanted. I figured you just wanted to see where they were so you could drive by them.
Okay. Yeah, I did. And thank you. But it would be nice, you know, as part of the agreement here, to have the actual legal description of the property. And is the conservation easement and the grant deed also available?
I can certainly provide them to you, and I apologize that they're not in the pack. I was unclear as to what I was actually supposed to do. So
that's okay. That's okay. I didn't know if it was a normal practice to include those or not.
We don't do this very, very ordinarily, so I think in the future we'll be sure to include them.
Thank you.
And when we did the original, we had a bunch of lots that were transferred, and those lots did have the description and the conservation easement. There is a term on the easement that I had a question on, but I'm going to need to find it because I don't have my binder. Are there other questions from directors?
Well, the other comment I have is that I did drive by, and there are probably half a dozen dead trees on the property standing, and the one does have the possibility of falling on the house on the other street. So there is going to be some cost that we're going to have to absorb if that's the way if that's what we need to do. My guess is that $3,000 will all disappear in doing so.
Vice President Mayor.
Yes, and I did ask legal counsel just a little earlier, like we directed him, to see if we could get the trees taken care of. He did mention that there wasn't an appetite on the side of the Land Conservancy to do that, and I would suggest that perhaps we could split the cost, especially on at least one tree. It would be a small burden on the Land Conservancy. It would make me feel a little bit better about expending the funds. And so I'd like to broach that as a subject to the Conservancy.
Can you please let us know what you think of that idea?
There we go. So Daniel Bowman, Conservation Director of Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. First, a couple of things. Again, thank you for taking up the item. Tim, I think you did a really good job of representing the conversation that we had. It's worth noting that we don't own this lot. Again, this is a lot owned by private individuals today. So when we talk about the appetite to do the weed abatement, it's not actually with the Land Conservancy, it would be with the present landowner. The Land Conservancy does not own this lot in fee. The way the MOU reads and the way that we would conduct the transaction is that we would actually own this property in fee simple for maybe 10 minutes, whilst the other recording documents were recorded in process, subsequently transferring it to the CCSD. That's a unique process for us. So as Amanda, or as President Rice rather pointed out, previously we had batch transferred these lots, and we had done them 100 to 150 lots at a time. Going forward, because of the infrequency of doing these, we're now doing them one at a time, and to expedite that and to make sure that the Land Conservancy is not stuck holding these lots for a long period of time, we're just doing this via escrow. I could certainly reach out to those landowners. However, my several communications with them before, the actual owner is an elderly woman. It's her son that's representing her to try to dispossess themselves of the lots. I would remind you that all the lots we're taking are donations, so they're doing this solely for charitable consideration. There's no capital outlay to buy the lots for us, which is a significant savings on balance overall. If the CCSD were to, for example, decline these lots, ultimately they may be required to purchase them at some future date as part of the building reduction plan. So, while yes, I think that there is a cost in the short term to address these trees, I think that cost is much reduced over the long-term cost of perhaps having to buy them at what would be established as market rate. As far as the Conservancy contributing to the cost of abating the or mitigating the risk of those trees, that was really the purpose of that annual stipend. And I had to seek permission from the State Coastal Conservancy, mm-hmm. as they're the underwriter really of this program, even to allow for that. So I'm not in a position right now to say that we could even do that. And my sense is that they would likely say, look, it was the intention of that annual stipend going forward to cover these types of costs per the MOU. I'm happy to do that, but my preference would certainly be that that you as a board take action today and vote to approve these so I can move forward. But you could certainly continue the item and I could look into it.
Director Pearson?
What's the cost of the escrow? Is that something else we
eat? Escrow fees typically for a small lot like this might be $500 to $1,000. Again, per the MOU, we're instructed to split those fees 50-50. There are no other purchase costs associated with this. An appraisal, to the extent that one would be required, is required by the landowner to justify a donation over $5,000. They've been instructed of that, and they've opted out of it. So I don't have that to furnish you, but I did secure title reports, which I furnished to your council.
Thank you.
Vice President Barringer.
Okay, I hate to do this, really. The landowner is going to donate the property, but he will, even though it's under $5,000, there's still some property tax that he's going to, that they will not have to pay in future years. And there's a threat of a tree, if there is a threat of a single tree encroaching on a neighbor's property, there could be either the neighbor or the district could mandate that that tree be removed. I don't want to be in the position of doing that, but for $1,500 to get rid of a $3,000 tree, to broach the owner on the practicality of
sure.
doing that is it might be too late in this instance. And if we're getting these one at a time,
I'm not sure that it's too late, and certainly a directive from this board that said something to the effect or a motion to the effect of we would accept these subject to might be more compelling to the landowner to at least expedite the dispossession. But it's worth considering what would happen into the future. They could certainly say, mm-hmm. you know, we're not in a position financially to do that. I don't know what their financial position is, but from the conversation, I assume it sounds as though they're not really in a great position to do that. But really, moreover, I think that what I would hope to do here is set some form of precedent for how we would proceed with this. Again, the MOU reads that we can retire up to 20 lots per donation per annum. That would be a lot. I think that right now we'd be looking at, you know, maybe half a dozen to a dozen at the most per year. But my hope would be that we don't have to individually consider the sort of maintenance burden. Now, this may be unique in as much as there are these, especially it sounds like one hazard tree. And again, it's up to you to decide how you wish to handle that. It's a much more powerful thing for me to be able to go back and say they have agreed to accept the lots subject to mm-hmm. per the motion and know that once that burden has been removed that then we can process the lot. It's far less compelling for me to call them and say, you know, hey, would you be willing to do this out of mm-hmm. pocket? And then they might continue to consider, right? So, again, I look to you.
Director
I have a question for the general manager. Do you know what it costs to fell a dead tree? Carlos does it every week, I think. Do you know?
It's really not falling the tree. It's hauling the debris away and making sure that the terms and conditions are met as outlined by the agreement between us and the coastal.
I mean, is it $3,000 or is it $10,000 to remove a tree? Or
no, it's about $1,000 per tree.
Yeah, about $1,000
per tree.
Yeah, depending upon the size of the tree, and the worst one there is probably $1,000. But if we're going to be in compliance with our own rules that we take out dead trees, which we're asking other people to do, then we need to take out probably 5 trees, as I counted, and there was no, you know, survey stakes or anything that I could tell exactly where the property stopped and started or anything like that. But there's a number of old dead pine trees and stuff.
Okay.
There,
so in
maybe you ought to get an estimate from somebody.
Well, you know, I want to expedite this a little bit, and there is a benefit to the community. So maybe I'll move. that we will accept these lots based upon the fact that the one or a single tree becomes the downing a single tree becomes the responsibility of the transferee.
Subject to that.
And if they decide they don't want to, then we bring it back and we'll.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I would second that.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second. And I have a couple of things. First off, I think that everybody here is acting in good faith to get this program moving and to allow for monies to come in when it comes down to buying valuable lots. There are some conditions in in the conservation easement, which I pulled from June of 16 to look through what the agreement, the MOU was, that are a little bit concerning, but that's probably mainly just me as an individual and having the majority of the board. I frankly am disappointed that, and maybe it's the board's fault for not being clear, but I'm frankly disappointed the fiscal impact is not just thin but inaccurate in that it doesn't include anything about escrow fees or title transfer fees or any of the other fees that are associated with doing the transfer. Those costs are not included. And it seems like in the years that we've had these, it would be a good idea if we actually worked up some idea of what those lots in general, once they're brought to a certain level of quality, how much is it going to cost us to take these lots? And this is all stuff that's our district and not anything necessarily on the Land Conservancy side. But to not have the documents that are referred to in the agreement is... My stepdad told me, don't ever sign it if you didn't read it. Read it all the way through. And if it's part of it's missing, I can't read it all the way through. So that's and I trust that our district council has looked at all those documents and would not be bringing this to us if the due diligence on the part of the district wasn't being done. But again, this is something that when you bring it to the board, we need to have the information on the... looking at the conservation easement agreement from a couple years ago, there's a term that says the specific conservation values of the property are documented in an inventory of relevant features of the property and on file in the offices of the grantor and the grantee, and that's the baseline documentation. Do we have that for this property?
So not yet. We would essentially amend the existing baseline documentation report to reflect these new parcels. Once this board takes some action towards agreeing to accept the lots, then I would send staff out to just essentially collect that data and amend that report. In this case, that addenda would be very short because it's a very small number of lots. So it wouldn't be anything very comprehensive, but it's worth noting that the lots do exhibit more or less the same characteristics of all the other what I would characterize as high quality lots, notwithstanding the dead trees. As an ecologist, it's worth noting that dead trees do serve ecological functions. So from a biological standpoint, you know, we don't necessarily see dead trees as being of low quality.
And the lots that are adjacent that are undeveloped are also under an easement, it looks like, from what I could tell. Is that
I think that's right. Furthermore, it may be worth noting that easement wasn't just drafted for those 2016 batch transfers. Rather, that goes all the way back to, I think, 2008 when we did the original one.
And there was a lot more.
That's right. So essentially all these lots are covered by a single easement with multiple APNs underneath it, right? So it's written to affect all of them in a uniform manner. Rather than an easement tailored to a specific lot. That makes it somewhat difficult in some ways in terms of addressing particular issues, but it makes it far easier for, in particular, all of us in this room to go out and monitor for compliance because we know we're looking for uniform standards.
That makes all kinds of sense. All right, we have a motion on the floor and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Madam President, can I just clarify the motion?
Yes, please.
So are we approving the transfer agreement subject to the owner agreeing to pay for the costs of the removal of one tree?
One tree.
Or do you want the tree removed prior to the close of escrow? Mm. And did you want to pick a specific amount of money? Because I think it varies mm-hmm. with respect to which tree is going to be removed.
Well, and the tree in question is the one that might fall on another side.
So removal of that tree prior to the close of escrow?
Yes.
Okay.
And otherwise they could renege on it.
Clarify.
And they can always come back. They can always come back. But I'm saying there should be a precedent that as we look at these things in the future, we look at it that way, because we're taking on the burden potentially if we have to down those trees. I'd rather not. I agree with you that a tree has an ecological value and should be there. As kind of a compromise, one tree that threatens other property, the person would probably have to get rid of it anyway. We're taking on the burden of downing four other trees if we want to, which I think is great, is good for us to do for the benefit that we get. But yeah, I would say prior to the close of escrow, that would be my motion. And I don't know if the second would.
If I could just maybe add, the way that I might handle that is to encourage them to essentially cover the cost of that as a donation to the Land Conservancy, so at least that might be charitable in nature as well. I'm not sure if that would qualify as being charitable. I'll look into that. But I would essentially offer the Land Conservancy as a pass-through for the funds. The funds would come from them, of course, but there may be a way that that could be charitable in nature. So long as we're okay with that.
I like it. Good idea.
Thank you. I knew there's a good reason why we partner with your organization, and that's not the only one. Let's have a role. And I think we can – I don't want to put liability or speak for a Cambrian, but I did speak to the person who lives and owns the house next door to these properties, and he said he would offer to clear them and do the fire clearance for $50. I'm not going to speak for him, but I think that we have a cooperative neighbor that's willing to step up because he seems to be also around in that vicinity as a regular full-time resident. So let's have a roll call vote, please. Can we have the motion back so we make sure we're clear on getting what we want?
Yeah, it was moved to accept the lots if the owner agrees to take on the cost prior to the close of escrow for the cost of the tree removal, and if not, then bring it back to the board for consideration.
Yeah, the
a hazard to the
Moni, could you add the removal of the tree that is a hazard to a neighboring property?
You want the tree removed first?
Just the tree. If they cover the cost of the tree that is of hazard to a neighbor.
Neighboring property. Yeah.
Neighboring property. That makes it more specific. That allows them to actually get a charitable, potentially a charitable deduction or whatever. And
can I clarify? Did you want the tree removed prior to the close or just the payment of the funds prior to the
payment of the funds, I think, is fine. Yeah. Especially if it can become part of their charitable contribution, I think that's the best way for it to work.
Yeah, we could certainly handle that through escrow as well to make that explicit. If, for example, the tree weren't removed but the funds were received, we could just make the funds come along to escrow to the CCSD as a requirement of close of escrow, and Tim and I can work that out.
Excellent.
Well, thank you. I think we are ready for a roll call vote, please.
Vice President Berenger?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I would like, before we move off of this item, I would like to suggest that CCSD needs to look at a policy about merging lots like this. I mean, there's right now there are three separate properties, and I don't think there's any tax benefits to the district, but it does make our record keeping maybe a little bit more simple if we get these all of these merged. I don't think it's something we can do today, but maybe it's a policy we could look at, whether that's something that makes sense to do or it's just a pointless endeavor. I mean, that's worth discussion at some point. Thank you.
Madam President, are you're referring specifically to Land Conservancy lots?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll get that written down.
But district-owned lots most of the ones that we own that we don't have equipment on or whatever facilities on is those lots, right?
Correct. And maybe we could it could be a twofold to
just
evaluate.
Might
the
be good.
Yeah. Okay.
Just it. As a future item. All right. Let's move on. Thank you for your patience, everyone, to 3A. Mr. Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 3A is discussion and consideration regard canceling the August 30th, 2018 public hearing and rescheduling and renoticing the Proposition 218 protest hearing for proposed increases to water, sustainable water facility, and sewer rates. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tim Carmel. Thank you.
Madam President, members of the board. Yes, this is to consider cancellation of the August 30th protest, Prop 218 protest hearing, and to renotice it for a different date. The reason is because of problems with the original notice, namely a failure to specify that all of the three proposed rates could be separately protested, and problems with whether all of the owners and customers received or had the notice mailed to them. The third issue that we briefly discussed last time was whether the notice had been timely mailed. That issue had been resolved. So we're left with the other two issues. If you do decide to cancel and renotice, then you'll have to obviously pick a new date. Additionally, there's an issue with regard to the protests that have already been received as to whether you should honor and count those protests. You'll have to make that determination. And lastly, we included a draft notice in your agenda packet, and we'd like you to carefully review that. I assume you have, make any appropriate changes, and to approve that notice. So with that, I'll turn it back to the board, and we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Vice President Berenger.
Yes, I was encouraged to hear that Mr. Handlers had conclusively advised that the mailing was done on a timely basis, and he has done hundreds of these consultations, and I respect his professionalism on that matter. The district clerk has mentioned that the mailing that went out this time was similar in size and structure as all other mailings that have been done in the past, and I would like to perhaps understand better in from the district clerk. I can't see any difference of us sending another notice out if we continue to use that mailing, and the expense of doing it again to the same set of people seems redundant. As far as notifying people of the fact that they can protest any one thing, either the SWF rate or the water rate or the sewer rate, I think that this community is very small. I think that everybody in this town knows exactly what they can or can't do. So, as far as people that have already protested, if they were confused, if I believe there's only 30 or 40 people, we could re-notify those people to adjust or maintain their protest or submit another. So I'm unconvinced that we're under the requirement to do a redo. We might do it, but I'm unconvinced that there's a force majeure, so to speak, that demands that we do a redo, and I'd like to be able to discuss that with the rest of the board.
Are there any questions before we go to public comment, and then we'll bring it back for further discussion?
Yeah, I'd just like some clarification from Vice President Berenger as to what he means by a redo.
Do we even need to do another notice? In other words, the notice that went out was timely. The notice that went out was sent, in my opinion, in the district clerk's opinion, to the same group of people that previous notices have gone out in 2000 and all the other times have gone out. It did, in fact, go to both the rate payer and the owner, and at least the owner's address for sure. And so it's valid, it's out there, and the only thing that many people are concerned about is whether they can protest parts, and I think that that news is out, and we could also notice people more thoroughly in the newspaper or whatever, that they can protest a portion of that particular rate increase.
I appreciate that explanation. Probably public comment will address some of what you've brought up. Thank you.
All right. Anything further from staff before we get started on public comment? Okay. Each of you will have 3 minutes. We're going to start with Donald Archer, followed by Sherry Bell.
There? Okay, thanks. I have several questions and comments about both this process and the rate increase in general. Why, even with legal counsel on staff, does the CCSD have such difficulty in getting a rate increase notification right without confusion? I don't think it was done in a timely manner. It took at least a week after it was mailed to reach my address. It wasn't clear. What has been going on hasn't been clear, and it may not be cost-effective the way that this notification has been sent out. I also wonder why there is such high staff turnover on the CCSD. I think that should be considered in terms of this rate increase. Why does the Templeton CSD, with similar responsibilities and serving a population of 7,700, with half the staff size and half the annual budget, produce approximately 1,500 acre-feet of water per year, while the Cambria CSD, serving a population of 6,400, produces 500 acre-feet per year? What accounts for these substantial discrepancies in providing similar services for similar districts? For a number of years, I, along with many other members of the community, have called for more money dedicated to the dire infrastructure needs of the district. Instead, the CCSD board and administration redirected funds to an unaffordable and unsustainable RO desal plant. This is not to mention the boondoggled attempt to purchase the problematic former Cambria Library property, potentially adding to the district's already crushing debt. Why should we trust the current CCSD administration and board to use the rate increases responsibly, considering its past bait and switch tactics, not to mention the recent attempt to redirect Fiscalini Preserve funding to pay for additional firefighters? If the CCSD can't get rate increase notifications right, continue to mismanage to administer inefficiently and with confusion, is not forthright in how funds will be dedicated and spent, and ignores the public will, why should we trust the CCSD with this rate increase? We cannot be sure where and on what the proposed rate increases will be spent. This is a huge credibility and trust issue, and there should be no rate increases until these issues are resolved. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Sherry Bell, followed by Tina Dickison.
Mr. Archer, oops, am I on? Mr. Archer touched on much of what I'm going to touch on. First, I would like to quote from the proceedings of the special meeting on July 12th regarding the 218 protest hearing. Quote, staff had indicated earlier that we needed to do some internal work regarding the Prop 218 notice to make sure when the notices go out, they're sent out properly to our database, and we've accomplished that since our last meeting. So being able to get that information out, in other words, just make sure that we are cross-referencing everything and making sure that the accounts are all up to date and everything like that, so we've done our homework, and we have accomplished that, and we are ready to go on our end. Unquote, Jerry Gruber. From today's agenda item, staff recommends the board discuss and consider rescheduling and renoticing the hearing on its proposed rate increases. Staff recommends that revised notices be mailed out to property owners and customers of record. Fiscal impact. There'll be an additional cost of between approximately $2,000 and $4,500 for mailing the revised notices. Between $2,000 and $4,500. What kind of estimate's that? It's either $2,000 or more than twice that. I had the cost of a CCSD special meeting broken down for me. The average cost is approximately $2,000 to $2,185. Let's say $2,000 to $2,200. This is at least the third special meeting to discuss the proposed rate increases. There'll have to be at least one more. So four special meetings, $8,000, $8,000, $800. Cost of mailing Mr. Gruber's original flawed, ready-to-go rate increase notice, don't know. Cost of mailing the general manager's revised rate increase notice, he thinks it will be somewhere between $2,000 and $4,500. Let's hope he chooses a different mailing house to send out the newly revised notices, maybe one a little closer to Concord, closer than Concord, which took 7 days to navigate 235 miles of California highways to make it to my mailbox. Not a real confidence booster for Cambrians who expect sound financial management practices of the person charged with managing our multi-million dollar and growing CCSD budget. The fact is, although the general manager said he did his homework and was ready to go on his end, when the last notices were sent, or not sent, as the case may be, he obviously didn't and wasn't. He now says issues remain as to whether the notice was properly sent, and that this time staff will double-check the mailing list and make sure all record owners and customers of record have provided notice. Because notices were not properly sent to all record owners and customers of record, the wording of the notice wasn't clear, and required information was not included. This is not the first time he's neglected his homework. Cambrians have paid dearly for his actions, inactions, and missteps. Is there any wonder why a Prop 218 protest is being mounted? It takes 3 votes to terminate him. What are you waiting for? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tina Dickinson, followed by Christine Heinrich.
Tina Dickinson, Cambria. Good afternoon, Board. I received my notice in the mail on July 20th. And when I did, I received this envelope containing the rate of increase. My husband, who is a property owner, received nothing. And yet, with Mr. Perry's approval, may I use Dennis, please? Mr. Perry, whose wife, like I, is the customer of record, she received a notice, as did her husband, Mr. Perry, who is an owner of the property, but not on the record, the billing record. If Mr. Director Behringer were to actually read something, he might get somewhere. In the guidelines, Attachment A, under 6, Notice of Proposed Rates in Public Hearing, number 6, Notice Delivery. The CCSD shall give notice of proposed charges and public hearing on the proposed charges via U.S. mail to all record owners and customers of record served by the CCSD, effective the date the notice is approved by the board. This notice that we received on the 20th was not approved by the board. The notice was not approved. So that's one issue. The other is that I did send Mr. Carmel an email with a number of issues that I found in the notice and the mailing. Right at the very beginning of the notice, it says CCSD is proposing to increase water and sewer rates over the next 3 years. Never said anything about the SWF. Yet inside, there are graphs, charts for sewer, water, and SWF. So that in itself was a red flag for me. And I'm sorry, Mr. Behringer, you don't have the decency to even, you know, look at the speaker that's here, but apparently that's not of concern to you. However, I raise these issues. And the other thing is postage. Here's another mailing from CCSD where it shows the date of the mailing with the red stamp. Why couldn't we have gotten it this way instead of something that has no date and no zip code? It does say Concord. So I think the other thing is in the guidelines, there are so many inconsistencies as to what, who we are. Are we the record customer of record, property owner, parcel owner. I wish record owner, I mean record customer, there's about six different names, and so the terminology isn't consistent. We need to have it clear. Is it the property owner and the tenant customer? I mean, it's a number of things, and it makes it very, very confusing. But I do thank you for holding this meeting today, and I do hope you do the right thing, which would be to renotice it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Christine Heinrichs, followed by Tom Gray.
Thank you. It's clear, Mr. Barringer, that the public did not actually understand.
Could you please address the president?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
all right.
Sorry, President Rice. President Rice,
thank you
for the opportunity to hear discussion from the board members who apparently were not persuaded that the public was confused. I certainly was confused. I couldn't tell whether it was required to agree to all the increases or only one or two. So I do think that this needs to be renoticed. I don't think I'm the only one who is confused by it. This is another example of poor management by the district. Today we're here to sort out this confusion. The district went through this process only 2 years ago. It seems like we could have known that this, how to do this, but apparently that was too confusing. And confusion continues to reign. This confusion is an expensive luxury for the district. As Ms. Bell pointed out, these special meetings are expensive. The confusion makes it impossible for the district to get its business done during regular meetings. It also makes it more difficult for the public to participate. It's bringing us out over and over again. It makes the meetings longer. I think that if we knew what we were doing here better, we could accomplish business and take care of it. These rate increases should have been, as was suggested by others, referred to the Infrastructure and Finance Committees. That's what they have been established for. We're fortunate to have them. They could proceed with their public review. The public could understand what's going on. They could make their recommendations, and we could proceed in a rational way. This is, again, because staff has not planned ahead, rushing the board, pressuring the board, then pressuring the community into a decision that may be not only quick, but also precipitous. In any case, whatever notice the board decides to do, it should include a form, a 218 protest form, in with the notice. Other communities do this. It's part of involving the community, and it should certainly be included in our notice. Take time to clear up the confusion, get the notice right, give the community a chance to take informed action. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tom Gray, followed by Dennis Perry.
Well, thank you, President Rice and the board, for letting me speak. I'm not a opponent of the rate increases per se, because I think the district does need this money, and I'm not against the idea certainly of redoing it, because I think there are certain things that were done, I think, in haste, mistakes, certain things were missed, not just the date or the not just the fact that you can protest three increases and a couple other things, but a couple of more significant things were missed. And I think this is a good opportunity for the board to take a little time to get it right, because this is a somewhat controversial rate increase, as you might have heard. And I think you're risking a rather embarrassing defeat in the protest process if this is not done as it should be done. Now, my clock's not running. I'm very happy about that, but probably should start it. Anyway, I got my. This is actually the revision, but it's very similar to the one I got in the mail. I got my protest, my notification in the mail, and I glanced over the first part, which is very complicated, these long, big charts and everything. And I go to the back, to the impact page, the last page of the statement, which tells you what a typical homeowner, or I should say customer, pays. And I was struck by a couple of things. One of them is that there is only one line for the dates, you know, the stages. There's this, the first stage impact. There's not the second stage impact in not 2019, and there's no third stage impact in 2020. And yet I understand this to be a rate increase for 3 years, or for three stages, actually, about a year and a half. So I look at this and say, well, this is very interesting that my rates will go up a certain amount in the first year, right, immediately right now, in other words, but what about 2019 and 2020? And I go back to the charts, and I see this footnote that says there's an asterisk on the 2019 and 2020 saying these rates are not automatic. The board must approve them. Now, I'm a little confused by that, because does this mean they're subject again to the protest process, or are they just the board can approve them or doesn't have to approve them? Of course, the board will approve them if it can. You know, government always takes what it can. That's one area of ambiguity I think needs to be cleared up. I think that the easiest solution is to put all three phases in that impact chart. There's a small thing in the impact chart, too, which is a little more complicated. It has to do with the SWIFT. The increase is actually overstated a little bit, because you're doing apples to apples to oranges, comparing the rate without usage now, without the surcharge, to the rate that includes the surcharge, what was the surcharge, in future years. And that's a minor point. I think the other thing is missing, and I'll say this very quickly. You've had two standing committees do some great work developing capital improvement plans in great detail. Nothing is told to the public about those plans, and I think that would help a lot for them to know what this money would be spent on, because there's been good work done on that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and I've got a couple of questions that we'll do follow-up. We've got Dennis Perry, and that's my last request to speak. If you would like to speak on this item, please get a slip in. Welcome.
Thank you, President Rice. Again, as I want to do, I would like to couch my remarks in terms of my personal regard for personal public health and safety. In the last meeting that we attended, the regular meeting last week, I heard mention keeping the whatever we're calling it these days, the emergency water supply, sustainable water supply, I've heard other names go by as well. Keeping that going in order to keep the aquifers full so that we can have enough water to fight fires. My plea to you folks is to consider methods to reduce the load, the fuel load that would precipitate a fire. Prevention is certainly worth a whole lot more than fighting fires, as we've seen so horribly tragically in the last week, where people have lost their lives, firefighters have lost their lives, and I just don't think we want to go that way in this town. I second everything that everybody had to say today, so I'm not going to repeat any of that, but I will tell you that my wife and I filed three separate protests because we weren't clear on exactly what was being asked of us in that rate increase and how we were supposed to perform. I think it can be done a lot more effectively and efficiently. And if it costs a few more bucks for another mailing, then so be it. But I would agree, let's get it right so that people have an idea of what it is they're actually protesting or supporting. Thank you. And one more thing I'd like to add. This is the 14th special meeting of the district this year. So with the costs that were brought forward, and I think you might have flashed me a $2,000 sign last week, we're at least $24,000 for a district, just for special meetings, for a district that can't afford to pay the bills that we have already. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I'd like to address the last item first. Most districts have two meetings a month, and so they incur the cost of two meetings a month, which is what we're essentially doing with the number of special meetings. We've had a couple of extras, but most of them have been continuations of the main board meeting. I think there's. I'm going to let staff answer some questions, but I think there were some important comments. Mr. Gray reminded me that we did have part of the conversation we had during the standing committee's joint meeting was talking about including some kind of phrase in the notice that would maybe help bolster the public's confidence that we were taking a new look at how we make sure that the finance side of things is done appropriately and that the infrastructure committee would be ensuring the monies were being used in the most appropriate manner, because this is additional oversight that's being provided. I don't know how that would be worded, and I would want to make sure that there was concurrence of the board to add something like that. But I think that that would help on the confidence level, and I appreciate Mr. Gray brought that back up. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mr. Carmel, but I believe the subject to board approval increases won't be subject to a new 218 process. That is an additional mechanism to ensure that the prior period's increase was being used as it was envisioned to be used by the board going forward. And I would hope that we have something in there that says we'll review the rates and the needs, like what have we accomplished, so that there's these points at which the board would weigh in. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Vice President Beringer served on the ad hoc rate committee with me, but I believe part of the purpose of those additional approvals by the board was to ensure that we really do need to increase and not just automatically.
Right. The previous rate increase, I understood that it was optional when, in fact, it was automatic. And I think it should have board approval. It's better than the last rate increase. So, yeah, that's my opinion.
So we could be in a situation where we don't have to approve it, but it doesn't go out to a new 218 process. Is there some folks on staff want to answer any of the other questions? Okay. Are there questions from staff by President Beringer?
I have one that was kind of reminded to me. I was going to ask the district clerk if she would have mailed it any differently, and the next time probably might likely would mail it the same way, and let me explain. Some people, I think it's bizarre if someone gets two notices to think that they're being noticed less for some reason. And I also noticed, no, I didn't. I threw away my envelope. But I'm convinced that the envelope, I can't prove it. But my wife is the ratepayer, so we only got one notice. So one notice is enough in my case, because we both own and are a ratepayer. So anyway, if you can explain a little bit, if not only is it traditional, but if you mail it out again, would you mail it out in the same to the same people in the same manner?
I did look into this issue after it was brought up at a board meeting and by the public, and the individual who performed this work assured me that they have verified against the two mailing lists, and we mailed it the same way this time as we did in 2015. However, if we need to review and make sure that as many owners as we can fit in the cells are notified, we will. But we do sometimes have property owners that are four or six people, and we don't notice all of them. Not all of their names are on the notice, or the envelope, I should say.
Is that a requirement, District Council?
It's not a requirement under state law. Under our guidelines, I'll just read you the definition, because that's what we're talking about. Record owner or parcel owner means the person or persons whose name or names appear on the San Luis Obispo County Tax Assessor's latest equalized assessment roll as the owner of a parcel. So, it's somewhat ambiguous, but it does say name or names.
In my case, it's in a trust. Would it come to a trust? Would it come to my address?
It would reference the trust and your address.
Okay, thank you.
There's some confusing language in the notice in addition to not being clear about that folks can protest one, two, or three. The revised notice does refer to this. It does not refer to what happens if you don't send anything in, that's counted. It's not counted because we only count the no's, and so essentially it's assumed to be a yes. This is a protest vote, meaning only the protests are the ones that are counted, and letters of support are always welcome, but they aren't counted because it's not more protests than it's just a straight number of, and the number. So here's the other question I have for you: if there's an owner of record, it's all based on the meter. So there might be a property owner and a rate payer, but we count it per parcel. So the number of, or per meter. I mean, I'm just trying to get that we're getting, even though we send out more notices than the number of that we would be counting against for the 50% plus one. I just want to make sure that I understand that what happens if there's a meter there and there's a bill paid there. Whether you're the property owner or the person who pays the bill, you're going to get an opportunity to protest one, two, or three of the rates. Yes?
That's correct.
But only one counts per?
Per parcel.
May I suggest something?
If there's a support and a protest, the protest is the one that counts, correct? This support doesn't cancel it out.
Yeah, it's not an election. It's a protest vote. Protest. We only care about the protests.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Gruber?
Just a suggestion. If our guidelines are cumbersome and we're struggling as a governing body and staff to interpret and understand these, maybe we should have a discussion about what are the minimum requirements based on statutes from the state, and consider doing that, because it is. I mean, I think we all agree that our process by definition, we're not even sure. And I think that says something about, I'm not trying to cast blame or anything, but would it not be a good idea to come up with a process or in guidelines that are consistent the way everybody else does it? We don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel here. People do Prop 218 protests all the time. I think part of the problem is in our guidelines themselves, because, as you indicated, there is a certain amount of ambiguity and a certain amount of confusion. Mr. Perry brought up a good point. He received something, but his wife didn't. And then Ms. Dickinson brought up a good point where they both receive, and I may be paraphrasing this improperly, I apologize, but examples like that. And if our guidelines are cumbersome, then aren't we really setting ourselves up for failure again? So,
Vice President Behringer?
I think it's a little late to go backwards on guidelines, but if guidelines are guidelines and the statute is the statute, and we've satisfied the statute, and if a guideline is just a guideline and it wasn't a resolution, wasn't in anything other than a guideline, and we've met the legal requirements, I continue to contend that people are over-noticed more than under-noticed in this case, or they're noticed properly. And if they're noticed properly and the mail drop was done at the proper time, there is some confusing if we want to clear up some confusion through additional outreach to the community. I don't think we need to reissue this particular notice. That's my position. I don't know if I have any support on the board, but that would be the most efficient way to do it. And we would get much-needed revenue when we need it. We need the rate increase, and I think the public knows we need the rate increase. So that's my point.
Mr. Carmel?
Maybe I can shed a little light on the distinction between the two. Those guidelines are our guidelines, and clearly we should be complying with our guidelines because we adopted them and they're ours. They are somewhat cumbersome and very detailed, and there are some ambiguities within them. A court wouldn't enforce our guidelines. They're directory. They're not mandatory. I don't know if you probably remember back in the last time we went through the same exercise, there were some flaws that were inconsistent with our guidelines. That doesn't invalidate the process or the notice or anything else, which is not to say we shouldn't comply with our guidelines. But again, they're not law, they're guidelines. They're directory, not mandatory. On the other hand, the implementation statute and the Constitution, that's law. That's what we have to comply with. The standards are much less strenuous. For instance, you don't have to indicate under state law that you can protest any or all of the proposed rates. We sort of took that upon ourselves, and I think that needs to be clarified. But I just wanted to shed some light on the distinction between the guidelines and the statutes that regulate this activity.
And to me, one of the things that the guidelines were intended to do was to help the public understand the process that would be used and feel confident that the votes wouldn't be discarded for some reason I don't feel like counting that one for whatever reason, signature doesn't match, or you know, it came in a day early or whatever it was. I think we need to err on the side of allowing the easiest and most clear way for people who would like to voice their protest about this to do that. In sending a new notice, we definitely would want to make sure that if we don't have something on the outside of the envelope that says, alert, this is a new thing, please read this, because it's important. We all get so much mail that doesn't need to be in the mail. You know, there's lots and lots of mail that is irrelevant or that come. I can't even tell you how many times I get a letter from Spectrum. I mean, they must use half of my rate just to send out mailings. But so we want to make sure that it's clear that this is new information and that the if we go that direction, and that the information is there, is clarified. Director Farmer?
Thank you. You know, one of the issues that I hear out there in the community right now, even with the improvements that I feel have been happening with regard to the operation, the two new standing committees, which I think haven't necessarily been given the opportunity yet to show how effective they can be, but we certainly have quality people on these two committees, especially the Finance Committee. So the fact that we have these two new committees, the fact that we used wise judgment in terminating the contract of our so-called lobbyist in Sacramento, I'd like to think that the community can see that we are endeavoring to go in the right direction. Obviously, there's a past history here where there's not a tremendous amount of trust with regard to how the district management and the board operate. So we're trying to kind of turn the aircraft carrier, you know, out there on an ocean of molasses. It's taking time. And one of the problems that has happened, like in the last month, is that we have endeavored to do a rate increase and apparently in a variety of different ways have done it as incompetently as possible. And it's... I don't know how the other board members feel. I know how one of them feels. I feel pretty discouraged about what has taken place so far. And in hearing the reaction of people in public comment today, I'm pretty much in agreement with a lot of what has been said. So with that being said, with regard to the guidelines being cumbersome or that the document that's already been mailed out is sufficient as it is and we just need to move forward, obviously the guidelines weren't so much cumbersome. We just kind of dropped the ball with regard to how things were, how we proceeded with sending out the document. So one of the problems, I think the main problem that took place was we acted in haste because some folks, maybe it was in the community or some folks on this board, wanted to get that rate increase implemented by September 1st. So now not only do we not have the rate increase implemented by September 1st, we're having to back up, start all over again, spend more money than we would have had if we had taken our time and been patient, which I seem to recall Director Pearson said, you know, let's slow the process down. We can ultimately, if we get the rate increase approved, we can put it, implement it in November. I seem to recall that was a comment that you made. And if we had followed Director, the newest member of the board, if we had followed his comment, we wouldn't be having this special meeting. We're having this special meeting. One of the comments, let me just comment on this. Since we are sending out a new document, and it's 5 pages long, and all of the board members have already received a mailer from one of the sterling members of this community, Elizabeth Bettenhausen. And she sent out a comment. It was a variety of comments. And she also enclosed a copy of a protest form. And since I believe the document that's going to be mailed out is 5 pages long, and I think this might have been addressed in public comment, since the document's already 5 pages long, why don't we put this protest form or something very similar on the back of it? So the protest form is already included. So this is more encouraging to people to include, you know, to make their protest. But it's not a protest in the sense that if we separate it as to water, sewer, and that facility, that people can vote in favor or against something. And since we do need the funds, we need funds especially to improve wastewater, to improve the plant, the collection system, as well as water storage and delivery, those are where the funds need to go. So people should be given the opportunity to vote for one of the three. I do notice on her form, she says, I protest, and then it starts all the proposed charges, rate increase. And I looked at this, and I was thinking about, remember when we went to school, and they give you the multiple choice, and they give you three choices, and the last one was all of the above? So it should be that first we get the three separate charges, and the last one should be all the proposed charges, we protest those. So other than that, I feel like it's a really good document. So my personal feeling is we need to act with patience and making sure this is the document we mail out now is as clear as possible. I mean, even Mr. Gray, who he and I don't necessarily agree on everything, but I think pretty much everything he said was accurate with regard to this document needs to be as clear as possible, and maybe, and I don't know how we're going to do this because it's going to cost more money, but we're already having to spend more money because it wasn't done right the first time. And I know not that many people understand what the heck is going on here as to why we need the money. I don't want to include sending out another mailer, but maybe in some fashion, we've already addressed our chief engineer has been here. He's had things up on the board there as to where the monies need to be spent, especially with regard to wastewater. But if there's some way that we can send out a little more information, like I said, as I think Mr. Gray alluded to, as to why these monies are needed. You know, what happened in the past, and am I critical of what has happened or not happened in the past? Absolutely. But what happened in the past with regard to not spending needed monies on infrastructure because it was being spent somewhere else, that happened. We're at this point right now where we need the funds especially for improvements at water and wastewater, especially wastewater. And so to make this process as clear as possible to the community is, like, really important. And I have more to say about what's on page 5, but I'm going to leave it at that and see what kind of feedback I get from what I just said.
I would like to say that I want to remind people that this board is we are not the professionals here to be in charge of doing these things. We try to guide the policy and make sure that we have a staff that we can rely on. And when I watched the meeting from July 12th, I think Ms. Bell also just reread into the microphone what the general manager said, and relying on the general manager's word that they were ready to go with it if the board chose to go forward. That's what the board was relying on, that this was ready to go. I think that whether or not we took enough time or not, we have to rely on the general manager to let us know if they can do it or not. If the turnaround time was longer, then he would have said so, and then we would have had more time built in, I hope. The notice include, yes?
Oh, just as a point of clarification, what I was referencing there is the mailing list. Compared to what we did previously in 2015, that's what, so we need to make sure we put it in this proper context. It was just referring to that portion of it, so not all the other difficulties associated with the date not being put on and the other two other items. So again, I go back to the guidelines. We followed the guidelines and the mailing list from the previous 2015.
Director, Vice President Barron.
The notice was in the packet, and it was ready it's starting from way back in May, you know, and it had been looked at by the public on 4 different occasions. When we looked at it, we did make a slight modification, and that was highlighted quite clearly, that the annual increases were not going to be automatic. They were going to be looked at by the board. It was the only change we made. The mailing was in the contract for Alex Handlers. Alex is a professional and has done hundreds of these. For us, for a board member or some members of the public to think that they have better ideas, that's great, but there's 2,000 ideas out there, and the one we settled on was the expert opinion of a paid consultant that we've agreed to. And I do think that the Finance Committee and the Infrastructure Committee have looked at what we're going to spend the money on. The Finance Committee is going to watch all of the money as they goes out, but the idea, if we don't get this increase in a reasonable manner, they can't do any work. They can't start prioritizing spending if there's no money to spend. The budget is the way it is, and it's dire unless we have this thing completed. So there was a professional, and I think that they did mail out to the proper people, and I'll bet you they're probably going to do the same mailing to the same list. They might change it where they go to actual APNs and pull out both names of the owners or something in order to clarify it, but I'll bet you I'll still get one notice. And so anyway, that was just kind of a comment that I have. That's all.
So what we need to decide today and what we need to do for staff to give them direction going forward is we need to first determine if a new notice is going to be sent. So why don't we take these just in one thing at a time, and we'll start with, do we want to send a new notice, which would require setting a new hearing date, because the time needs to still be 45 days if we do a new mailing, correct, Mr. Carmel? Mr. Gruber, did you want to say something?
Yes, ma'am. But with understanding that the noticing that we sent out, okay, met the legal requirements, so we can establish if we're going to send it out again, but it's going to go out in the same way that it did previously. In other words, by the established guidelines that we have and the in the outline that was, you know, previous. So I just want to make sure the board understands that that it's going to follow the same guidelines, and so just want the board to understand that. So thanks,
Vice President Barringer.
I would move that we do not set a new hearing date. We keep the same hearing date and consider this a valid notice, with the caveat that we do additional outreach to ensure that the public knows how to protest, and that to emphasize how they can protest one, two, or three things, and I think that's one area of clarity, and it also include, we can't. Legally, we can't say why we need this money. We can't advocate, right? We can't advocate.
We have to explain why we need the money.
Well, we can explain, what we can't do. District
Come
council,
on, folks,
district
please.
Council will help me here. We
can
can't advocate.
We can't advocate.
Educate,
in the
but
notice,
not advocate.
It does,
okay.
In the notice, it does say that it's needed for infrastructure.
Okay. So. Mm-hmm. All right. So, but anyway, that's my motion.
Is there a second for that motion? Seeing none, that motion fails for lack of a second. Is there another motion regarding resending or renoticing and setting a new hearing date?
I'll let you do
it. Yeah, I would move that we go ahead and have a new hearing date set and send out new notices.
Is there a second?
Making a second.
Well, let me second it so that we can have a discussion.
Okay.
I'll second that with under the proviso that we scrutinize the notice that's in the packet.
Yes.
Okay.
Director Farmer.
I just want to add that since it's been brought up that apparently about 40 folks have already sent in their protest statement, that since we're sending out a new document, for want of a better term, that has more clarity to it, that we should probably send that document to the people that have already voted, explaining why they're getting this newer notice, because it's different than the one that they originally got, and this one gives them more options, and it's the one that everybody else is receiving. And I think that would be the only fair way to do it.
And we'll take up that direction to staff. That is another part that we need to take up. We will take that up as a separate, so we make sure we get the clarity on that issue. Okay?
Yeah, I was probably out of line. And
No, not at all. It's an important thing, and I think just taking it separately will make it better. So the motion is to set a new hearing date and send a new notice.
Can I add a little clarification on the second? Is that we also determine that date during this discussion? You know, in other words, have staff and district council suggest a date and set one? Okay.
Let's get this motion passed, and then we'll get to the setting the hearing date, counting the days, and all of that. So the motion is to... Can you please read it back so we have it?
To have a new hearing date set and send out new notices.
Thank you. Let's have a roll call vote, please. Motion by Director Pearson, seconded by Vice President Barringer.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Barringer?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. The motion passes 4-0. All right, the next item we need to do is picking a hearing date, and so that we need to make sure we give staff the time that is needed to do any revisions that are needed to the notice, and making sure that the mailing date is correct.
And the mailing list is correct.
And the mailing list is correct. So and hopefully for implementation November on the bills for November 1st, because the billing cycle...
Okay, can I also suggest that maybe the rate ad hoc committee review the notice before it goes out? That after they're done, that...
You sure you want to put an English teacher on that?
No, I think that would be wise.
Okay.
One thing I forgot to mention is that in Alex Handler's contract, he was responsible for dropping the mail, and so he didn't address them all, but so staff allowed Mr. Handler to complete his contract, and so that's why it went to Concord or whatever.
Right.
And so on.
Right. No, staff, I don't think, took a trip up to Concord in order to mail those. So so do we have a calendar that we could be looking at, Mr. Carmel?
Do we want to have a discussion before we talk about the date, or do we want to set a date first?
I think we need to discuss a little bit.
Yeah, because let's talk about it.
Because I think that we're where Mr. Pearson was thinking about starting it again in November, December. I think that's what has to happen. I don't think
right.
It makes
November 1st.
Anymore.
We've got to get it done before November 1st, obviously.
So, and I'd like to be early enough in November so that staff has time to implement all they have to. So if we shot for something like in the middle of October, that might be something that we can start with.
It's fine with me. Mr. Carmel?
The clerk and I did discuss sort of the timing involved, and I know there was a request from Monique to have a 14-day period, which is actually more like 7 work days, to work through the list and to make double-check and make sure everyone is on the list. So we worked from that. If you start today, we would mail out notice on the 17th, so I'm sort of working backwards. So that would give Monique and her team at admin the opportunity to carefully review the list. It would also give the ad hoc committee or whoever you choose to actually carefully review and modify the notice adequate opportunity there to get it right. So sort of working through that, the date that we would feel most comfortable would be, on Thursday, October 4th, which is 56 days from today. And that has that built-in 17-day time period during which we can both double-check the list, make sure that the notice is accurate, there are no mistakes on it, and that everyone's comfortable moving forward. You could certainly go beyond then. That to us was sort of the first realistic date where you would still get it in place so that November 1st could be achieved. But I think any date beyond that is also acceptable. There's no rush.
I think 17 days is fine, and I like the earlier we can implement it, the earlier we can implement a new billing structure and so on and so forth. So if that's a date that we could be comfortable with, I'm comfortable with, October
7th? October 4th.
October 4th. I'm comfortable with that date. And we can't. So we can't capture October revenue. Okay, well.
No.
Okay.
We couldn't anyway.
That's a good date.
Yes. Mr. Carmel?
No, I said we wouldn't be able to capture October revenue anyway because mailing goes out on November.
Right.
And just as clarification, you're probably just going to double-check the list but send it to the same people you sent it to before. Is that correct? Probably?
That's not my department.
Okay. But I only got one notice, and it was because my wife's the ratepayer, and I didn't get one as an owner, but she's an owner, so she got it. So I think I'm very comfortable with that. I think sending multiple notices to any individual is confusing because they think they might be able to protest them both. And so if whatever the requirement is that we've done in the past, I think is sufficient. That's my guidance.
Did we have a motion on the date so that we can have clarity? Let's have a motion on the date. If that is, did everybody check their calendars for October 4th? I don't even know what day of the week it is. Okay, then that works. That works okay for me. If it's a Thursday, I'm already set.
Fine.
Yeah. All right. So I would entertain a motion to send new notices so that we may have a hearing following the notice is being sent 45 days later on October 4th. Is that right?
I'll move that we send a new notice and have a new hearing on October 4th.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Moved by Vice President Barringer, seconded by Director Pearson. Is there any further discussion? All right. Then let's have a roll call vote, please. And then we just have a couple of other issues to clear up. Vice President Barringer?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye.
We need to figure out how we're going to deal with anyone who has already protested. So staff knows what to do with those protests, and I'd like to hear from directors on that issue.
I want to talk about that.
Well, I like Director Farmer's idea. I like it better than not counting them, or I like it better to not automatically count, give them all an opportunity to modify their protest. But if they don't modify the protest, I think it should stand. But I think they should have an opportunity to modify their protest. Although it's a little different. I don't know. What do you think, Director Farmer?
Confusion can be contagious, so let me try and make this as clear as possible. Everybody should get the new document and the new notice, and for people that have already sent their notice in, perhaps they need to get, you know, an additional letter included. I know that's going to be difficult. Maybe they need to get a letter letting them know we've done a new form, and so you need to, well, we're doing a new form, we're mailing that out, and we're discounting the one that you first sent in, and okay. There you are. Word that in any way you wish.
Okay, for clarification, rather than it coming in the notice, wouldn't it be even better if we took the names and addresses of those people that have already have a notice and send them a separate document?
Yeah.
As clarification, I think that would be a better or as good a way to go. If you think that's a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. Did I allude to that already?
No, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
I thought I did, but
okay,
anyway,
good.
Yeah,
good.
It's a courtesy thing.
Especially if we're not going to count the initial protests we already received. Do we have the ability to obviously, since they have signatures, we do know who we would have to send a separate mailing to say there's going to be a new notice, you need to resubmit your protest if you're going to?
Yes, but it is all manual work.
Understood. And it doesn't have to go out on the same exact day, but we do need to make sure that I think it's important that we notify those folks, especially if the board wants to go the direction of having those votes essentially be nullified. We don't want to be accused of trying to throw out votes that are valid protests.
Is that something we have to vote on? No.
Let me continue on. I want to hear what
the protest,
Director Pearson
okay.
has. Yep.
I would also like to suggest that not sending the form in with the notice and stuff, but within the notice having a link or a place to go on our website where the form will exist, and also having the forms available at CCSD for people to pick up and fill out as they may there. Okay, I don't want to add more confusion. People will think they have to return that form, and I don't want that. I want them to have to take the step to go ahead and go out to the website, download the form, or they can use their own form if they want to. Mm-hmm. But download the form. We'll have it out there. I think the one Ms. Bettenhausen did was excellent with a few modifications. And that way we are providing a form if they want to use our form so that they don't have to go to the hassle of trying to make it themselves, right. And it'll be available.
And I would support that direction, and almost to the point where I would move that we adopt the template that we have in today's staff report, modified by the ad hoc committee. And if there are no substantial changes, that the ad hoc committee has the authority to make sure it's all, everything's spelt right and it's going in the right places. And if there's substantial changes that the ad hoc committee comes up with, that they have to bring it back to the board.
Is there a second?
When would we bring it back? When would you bring it back to the board?
In other words, it is as in the packet. Everybody sees what's in the packet. If the ad hoc committee makes something other than
cosmetic,
that it can go out as approved by the ad hoc committee. If there's a substantial change, then we would have to bring it back to the board. In other words, we can't just go off and do something that we want.
Yeah, the only thing that I would direct the ad hoc committee to do is beef up the area where we're describing what work needs to be done, even to the point of maybe including a brief CIP list or something on that. But I'd like to see that beefed up more so that...
Because
when I read that, I said, oh, okay, yeah. You know, we need some work done. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an awful lot of money we're asking for. We must need a lot of work. What are we talking about? And I think some more descriptive area there would be helpful. Educational.
Okay. I think maybe an amending motion to be more specific about what things we would want to change might be helpful, where it has a notice alert, do not discard, this is an important notice, it's a repeat sending, that we include something that says no response means supporting the rate increase, and that we include something about the standing committees will continue oversight of the funding, the infrastructure committee and the finance committee, as part of the diligence of the board and the committees to make sure that the money is being spent appropriately for the community.
I wouldn't support that. All of that. Because if we start making substantial changes to this 218 notice, we're diverging quite a bit from the professional tried and true way of producing that. I do think that the standing committee, mentioning the standing committees, would be monitoring the expenditures of any rates that come into the water, wastewater, or SWF funds. I think that's worth saying. Mm-hmm. But to try and go into a CIP list, I think it would go beyond good practice, because now all of a sudden you're saying you're going to spend it on this, and if you want to spend it on another thing within the wastewater department.
Okay, I'm okay with scaling difficult. Back that yeah. part to essentially say the standing committees will help ensure the...
Right. So I would support Agreed. Those two, and I would also support on the envelope for it to say that this is a re-notice.
Please read.
Please read. But I think that to go beyond that, to say that you got to respond or it won't count. It's confusing, and I don't think it's. I don't think it's effective.
That if you don't respond, that it means you support it.
Right. Well, you don't. You agree to it. You're not supporting. Nobody's. There isn't anybody here that supports the darn rate increase. Not a single person. What they want to do, no, you support getting the additional money, but the people don't want to support spending it. So, having to pay it.
Right.
So,
I'm a ratepayer.
So, yeah, as a ratepayer, are you? I'm just saying, you're not supporting. If you ask them,
here's the thing. Okay. The first time I experienced the 218 process here in town, it was in 2007, and there was a sentence in there that caught my attention. It said, "If you do not respond, that will be counted as a yes," and that's all I'm saying, that we need to include something simple like that, that makes it clear that. Well, that one went super well. But it's something that caught my attention and made me look into it more. And I didn't protest that one because of the rates. I protested it because of the add-on for the money funding for the BRP. But that's a whole nother ball of wax. I'm just saying that people need to know, if we don't hear from them, we're assuming that they're okay with it. And that's all I'm saying. It's a simple, straightforward statement. I think you have, O ye of little faith. Your microphone's not on. I think there's an important transparency and making it clear to the public what their rights are under the California State Constitution and Prop 218. I think it's incumbent upon, we need the money, and I'm thinking that this is not going to be a protest that's successful unless we continue to try and make it difficult or confusing for people to have their will known. It's just my position, but I'm one. I don't have a problem with being in a minority if the board wants to go the other direction. I think it's important we have something about the standing committee's monitoring, that there's a new alert, and if you don't want to include the no response means yes, then that's fine with me. I'd like to see.
Good, I'll second that.
Director Pearson?
Yeah, I'm fine with the first two, but the third one leave out.
Director Farmer?
I might be slightly confused here, but I believe there absolutely should be a statement, you know, in the mailer that a non-response is considered a yes vote.
I think there's and I think that there is not a majority to go that direction. I think we probably have a tie if we were to vote on that one. Let's do the first two. I think we've got a second on the first two. So there will be the motion, I believe, is about doing the revision. Yes? See what the motion on the floor is.
It was your motion, actually. You moved that. You were comfortable with the date's already set.
Yeah.
I move that we send the notice out as in the agenda packet with minor modifications as suggested by Director Pearson to include the fact that the infrastructure and the finance committee will be monitoring the expenditure of any funds that are gained through this notice, and that we put on the outside of the envelope that it's a revised notice. Period.
And that we provide a form on our website.
So that has to be in the
right.
So we'll add that in the notice also.
Within the notice, right.
Within
right.
the notice that there is on the website and that it's available at the office.
Right. And I'll accept that. Provisions. I'll accept that second.
I second.
Okay.
Are we open for discussion now? Are
yes,
we voting?
We are.
Cool. Are we including a protest form with the mailer?
No.
And we're not doing that because
not under this motion. We're not.
Well, I would think that we should be making the whole process, as hesitate to use this, transparent and as easy as possible for the public to respond. I mean, if they have to either go to the website and make a copy or go to the office, that's just one more added step that they have to do. People are busy out there. Oh, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I'll do it next week. And then all of a sudden, 45 days go by. Oh, I forgot to do that. I think we should make this as easy as possible. We are trying to get funding for needed infrastructure improvements. And what we're doing here with the protest form is giving us the opportunity to get these added funds. I mean,
but that's just the opposite.
No, it isn't.
So
no,
what
it isn't. It's making people easier. I'm still talking. It's making it easier for people to state how they feel about this process. And if we put this protest form in there and they say, well, by either checking or not checking something, you are not protesting the rate increase, that's the direction that we want to go in. I mean, maybe am I wrong here?
Well, I think we've got a a motion on the floor, and that having the protest form should be a separate motion so that the board can fully express how each of us feels on it and take a vote on it, because there's some contention on it. So we'll do that, and then you should make a following on motion, okay? Okay.
Apparently. Yes, okay, thank you.
So the motion on the floor, is everybody clear on the motion on the floor?
I would like it reread, please, since obviously I'm somewhat confused.
To send the notice out, which is in the packet, to include minor modifications made by the committee and with alert information on the outside of the envelope and a protest form on the website.
Yeah, the standing committees.
And the standing committees will monitor spending of the
oversight.
We'll provide financial oversight. Yeah, okay, good.
Vice President Berenger?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
No.
President Rice?
Aye. So would you like to make a motion to include a protest form in the notice this time?
I make a motion that we include the protest form in the mailer.
I will second that. Is there discussion on that?
What would our guidelines say on this? Do the guidelines stipulate that we will, won't, or that we have to?
The guidelines are silent on that issue.
The motion is to have a protest form included, and let's have a roll call vote.
Was there a second?
Yes, I seconded.
Oh, thank you so much.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
No.
Director Pearson?
No.
Vice President Berenger?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Further direction needed by staff on this item?
I hate to complicate things.
Let's make sure we get the complications
right.
Sorted out.
I don't recall if there was a motion or any real discussion regarding those who had already protested getting a separate letter notifying
no,
them.
We
discussed it, but I would, I guess if you need a motion or direct staff
better.
To send a separate
we would.
A letter to each person that already has received all the protests that we have received as of this date, let's say, separate from the re-noticing. Explaining the options that they have.
Second. Can I get some clarification before we go forward? Because are we going to say that those protests that have already come in, is that part of the letter, is that we're not going to count them? That's why we're noticing them again separately.
Well, you know, that's
this is what I'm trying to, because I know there's a practical issue that with it.
Let's have some clarification. There's two ways we could do it. I prefer the way that the person has an opportunity to re-protest more specifically. I think that that's more value to us, to the community. And their previous protest would not count because we're talking about a whole new different date, a new
right.
structure, new things that are in there. So it's kind of a different animal. So that would be my preference, is that they're noted. And even though it's manual and it's 60 people, it's I think the preferred way to do it.
Okay, but if they don't send in a new one, are we counting their old one?
I would suggest we don't.
I would suggest we do. We
what
give
do
them
think?
An opportunity to re-vote. But
Director
I think
Farmer,
that we should
think?
Not disqualify it just because. Director Farmer?
Would you like it to count or not?
Well, personally, since the first protest form that they sent in is not like the one that everybody else is going to be sending in, I don't see why we should count it, because it's a different protest form.
I would,
but you folks do whatever the heck you want. Thank you.
Well, I think you can have a valuable viewpoint here, Director Farmer, because you do have a different view of it. There wasn't a form in the first notice, so any protest that came in wouldn't be on a form. But I don't think that somebody who's already protested should have their protest tossed out. You think it should be tossed out?
Let's say
I was crazy and I already sent in my protest form.
Well, I won't accept the first part. You're not crazy.
There's one opinion.
Okay, so?
If I sent in a protest form already.
Right.
And now I'm getting a letter saying, well, we had to send out the notice again. You need to re-vote because the previous protest is not going to count. I'd way rather do it. It might be clear. Can you, maybe staff can speak to the practical, on the ground, pragmatic matters on this, because we want to make it not difficult on staff also, but make it easy for people who would like to change. Maybe I sent in my protest, but I didn't realize I could protest only the sewer.
District Council. Yeah.
I think either way you do it, that information needs to be on the notice itself in order to avoid confusion and having a separate letter.
That's
say your vote does count if you don't choose to protest again or not, but it has to be clearly stated in the notice itself.
Right. So which way do we want to go?
So
you have to vote again or we'll count your protest?
Okay. I think what District Council is saying, we don't have a choice. We have to make it clear that if you protested, what the situation is.
Right.
And I think that
the
within the notice we say that if you have previously filed a protest with the district by whatever date today is, that you will need to submit a new protest. I know, but that's the clearest way, and I think that's what Director Farmer would like.
And
the only other way is to say you don't, but you're really not protesting the same thing anymore. It's a different date. It's a different time frame. Different words are in the notice. Would that work, District Council, for that phrase to be if you have previously protested to the rates?
We're not completing that
by July. That you need to resubmit a protest.
That will work. It just has to be clearly worded on the notice itself. And I think you'll need to include that as part of the criteria that you allowed the ad hoc committee to include on the notice.
Okay. All right.
Director Farmer?
What did you wish for me to add?
I thought you had your light on.
No, my light was not on.
All right. So we've got some direction now on the people that have already filed a protest. I think we have... Mr. Carmel?
You'll have to do that by motion so that it can be included in what the ad hoc rate committee is allowed to do.
Okay, did I move that? I made the motion. You seconded
it?
It can be a separate motion.
It can be?
Sure.
Okay, the separate motion is that we include words within the... within the new notice that states that if you had protested a rate increase prior to August 1st of 2018, that you will need to submit a protest to this notice.
I have a wacky suggestion.
There you go, wacky.
Very wacky suggestion. If we were to include a protest form in the notice, then you say that it has to be on the district protest form.
And then
the prior ones wouldn't count because they're not on the new protest form.
Yeah, that's a wacky one, but I think that doesn't work, right?
Well, I think you could also say in this notice that if you protested based on the original notice, it doesn't count.
Okay.
You have to protest again, and it would be okay. Just as clear.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah, okay.
Is that a motion?
Yep.
Yeah, my motion is yes. It's not the wacky one. It's the fact that if you have protested
you
prior to August,
protest.
You need to protest again.
Yeah, no date. I think you just indicate if you've
protested
previously.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Protested previously, you need resubmit
to resubmit
your protest.
And
you seconded it?
I second.
Okay. All right. So we've got motion by Vice President Barringer, seconded by Director Pearson. This is going to be some good sausage, I can tell. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Did we get a vote on the last one, though?
Why don't you read the motion that we have
We have two motions on the floor now.
We have
the previous one that was to advise protesters already submitted that they
Didn't vote on that already. Okay.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So is this in place of that?
That's included in that.
Can we merge them?
In other words, we're going to do two things. One was to advise everybody that's previously protested and to put wording into the protest,
into the
notice. So we can combine those two.
I think that's fine.
We can combine those two motions. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. I was reading the press.
What we're trying to do is combine those two things.
We're combining two motions.
One that we notice that
we
send a separate notice
to
everybody
to
that's already protested and put wording within the.
I was suggesting that you don't need to separately send them letters if you clearly indicate on the form that if you've already protested, it's not going to count. You'll need to protest again. I think it would be really confusing to have something outside the notice that affects the notice.
I will withdraw my original
motion
for the noticing.
Let's have a fresh motion.
I have a fresh motion that says that, well, why don't you read my second motion, which is, can you do that? Or I'll read it. We should add language within the new 218 notice that states that if you have previously filed a protest with the district, you need to refile a notice to this notification or to this,
So motion by Vice President Barringer is seconded still by Director Pearson?
Yes.
Okay. Let's have a roll call vote. Got it.
Can I just make a brief comment?
Sure.
Thank you. For those of you that are here in the audience, for those of you that live in this community and are watching this on TV, for those of you that are watching this in another community here in San Luis Obispo County, it must be understood that none of the board members had hallucinogenic drugs in the water they drank before this discussion. Thank you.
That's not a certainty.
Who seconded that? Pearson still?
Let's have a roll call vote, please, on the motion.
Vice President Barringer?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
I think so, yeah, sure.
President Rice?
Aye. Thank you for your... Who's got the Tums? This is a spicy sausage today.
Can we move back?
You guys got through it, though.
No, I think we're good. And next up, what do we have next up?
Just item 4A,
hold on.
Oh.
I'd like to make some comments on the document that's being sent out, if I could, please.
Sure.
Since I don't think we've had the opportunity to do that. So,
yes.
Correct, on 3A. So my first observation here is that it says up here, revised notice of public hearing on proposed rate increase. Well, where it says down here, rate increases needed to fund investment in aging infrastructure. So I notice in the first paragraph where it says here, CCSD's water and sewer utilities rely primarily on revenue from service charges to fund the cost of providing service. As such, water, I have to say the words because they're printed here, sustainable water facility and sewer rates. And then it goes on to say again, sustainable water facility. And I'm just curious, since it says later, many of CCSD's facilities are approaching the end of their useful operating lives and are in need of rehabilitation and replacement. These facilities include old water and sewer pipelines, water pump stations, sewer lift stations, and CCSD's aging water treatment facilities. However, what is underlined and highlighted in red above that is sustainable water facility. Is for some reason, I mean, if I saw something, if something was mailed out to me and it was highlighted in red and underlined, I said, well, that's the most important thing I need to be concerned about. And yet, when I read the last sentence in this paragraph, it doesn't say anything about the water facility. It's talking about the aging infrastructure that needs repair. And then we go to the second paragraph, and it starts, additional infrastructure improvements are needed to comply with regulatory requirements, including capital improvements to CCSD's, once again, sustainable water facility. And I'm thinking, okay, capital improvements to a four-year-old facility that hasn't been operating. And I'm wondering, well, what are those capital improvements? Because I'm thinking an improvement. An improvement for a facility that's only 4 years old and hasn't run. I'm wondering, what could that possibly be? So could I get an explanation on what that improvement is?
I can answer the first part of the question. That is, it was provided in red line so you could see the changes to the notice. The red line won't be in the notice when it's mailed. It's just to alert you to the changes in the notice.
You mean us here?
Yes.
That are looking at this?
Yes. Right. We should have mentioned that in the staff report. We apologize.
Well, I don't know if there's an apology needed, but considering my overall skepticism, this was my first reaction.
That's okay. The other item, referring to capital improvement projects for the sustainable water facility, but would be related to brine disposal. We understand and we accepted the cease and desist order and the closure plan. So there are going to be some costs associated with that's a very good point.
So let me just say this much. I think, and pardon me for interrupting General Manager Gruber, but it's a matter of semantics.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of an improvement. It's not really an improvement. It's a decommissioning of something that was flawed to begin with. And it's, like I say, it's a matter of semantics, but we're talking about clarity and transparency with regard to how we are relating what the district and what the district and what management is doing. And I just think this is, I understand why it was stated this way. I just don't think it's, it doesn't reflect, as I said, a clear view of the situation. That's my humble opinion. Thank you.
I think the rates ad hoc committee hears your concern, and we will make sure it's not right under, and make sure it's clear. Yeah, we'll make sure it's clear, because I think you do have a point, and it isn't just semantics. It's important to have the language right.
Thank you, President Rice and Vice President Beringer.
All right, next item. Yes. Next item, 4A.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm just going to briefly go over my general manager's report. Also, as part of the general manager's report, there is the finance manager's report. So I've asked Alan to be here in case there's any questions you may have. Just first of all, I have included some photos, a pretty extensive photo gallery of the infrastructure improvements we made over the 3 years, because there was some really good dialogue between the board and myself and the community regarding where has some of the monies gone from our last increase. And I think that was a really good question asked by Director Farmer. So very good question. And so I hope that I captured to the best of our ability some of those areas in which those funds were to be spent. They weren't all of them, because I just didn't I didn't want to include all of them, but I hope that gives us a better understanding of where we are on some of those improvements we've made, with the caveat and the understanding that there's still a significant amount of work to be done. Again, I do want to thank the standing committees, both the infrastructure and the finance committee. I agree. I think they're doing a really good job, and they're probably their best work is still in front of them. Alan Labossiere, sitting here, is our interim finance manager. There was a question regarding Alan's employment arrangement. Alan is a retired annuitant. That's a fancy word for he doesn't have to work anymore. Alan is not receiving any benefits, nor is he a contract employee. In my general manager's report, I indicated that we've begun the recruitment process. We have already started that recruitment process. There's one thing that I wanted to point out in the recruitment brochure. It said the finance manager will answer to the assistant general manager. We do not have an assistant general manager. It's been corrected and been recirculated. The Parks and Recreation Commission is in the process of recruiting for three new commissioners. The ones that are currently serving have the right to reapply. But I just wanted to let the public know that if you want to serve on a really great commission and get involved, we would encourage you to apply for those positions. And again, there's information on the website. On July 12th, Melissa Bland and myself, we met with the realtors, and it was just a very, very productive meeting. We talked about the Prop 218 process. We talked about the capital improvements that are needed, and then Melissa addressed their concerns as it relates to retrofit upon resale and the escrow process. Overall, the meeting went really well. We had a kickoff meeting with PG&E. If you recall, the board authorized us to start that process. It's a three-stage process. We had that meeting on July 18th. I indicate here that I'll keep the infrastructure, and it really should be the infrastructure and finance committee, appraised of the progress we're making. The first phase in that process is the assessment process. If you recall, that's going to be about a 6 to 8 week process, and that includes us working with PG&E. Then comes the audit, which is a more comprehensive process where they really start getting down to the design of everything. The PG&E at that point in time will come back to the board and ask them to fund a portion of at least the design work. If you recall in previous board meetings, I've indicated that in order for us to be successful for grants, we really need to have a shovel-ready projects ready to go. It's a highly competitive process, of the grant process, and we want to be able to put ourselves in a position where we can get grant funding. And I think this partnership with PG&E is going to enable us to do that. And again, that's being in a position where we can financially support any kind of low-interest loans or grants, matching grants, that we have everything designed that's ready to go, engineering, and then any environmental work that needs to be done. So when we get to the third phase of the PGE in agreement, again, there's the assessment, there's the audit, and then there's the design, build, and fund or construct. We'll have further dialogue with the board. We did meet with John Rocky from the Regional Water Quality Control Board on July 20th to talk about running the sustainable water facility from a recirculation standpoint. It wouldn't require a triggering of a stage three. We just want to be able to make sure that the system, all the instrumentation, the pressure differential, the calibrations are all working properly. It would not generate any brine. And what we want to do is be able to train our new sustainable water facility chief plant operating operator with our existing staff who is familiar with running the plant before that individual retires. So that's really just a planning thing that we want to be able to do. I was asked by a couple of the directors, when do we anticipate, what's the timeline, Jerry, for the regular coastal development permit with the planning department staff? I do have an email from Erlen where he indicates that it's probably going to be about another four or five months. The planning department staff have been absolutely fantastic. They've even actually brought on additional staff to help us with this process. However, there are portions of the work that Cindy Cleveland is doing from the biological standpoint that's going to need to be finished to be incorporated into that report. So we're looking at a 4 or 5 month period of time before it goes, the regular coastal development permit goes to the Planning Commission, and then it will go to the Board of Supervisors, and we can assume that it'll be appealed to the California Coastal Commission. With that being said, I think it's important that we continue or do a better job in establishing a dialogue with the California Coastal Commission staff, especially relating to the regular coastal development permit. And with that being said, we did have a conference call. I appreciate President Rice being in on that call. Erlyn Singelwald from the County Planning Department was on there. And we also had Tom Luster and Daniel Robinson on the call. I put an agenda together for that, and some of the things we talked about was ESHA. What specific areas of concerns do you have relating to ESHA? How can those concerns be addressed? The impoundment basin, what would the California Coastal Commission staff envision the basin being utilized for that could represent the highest biological benefit to sensitive habitat? And as I go through these, I don't want the board or the community to think that I'm out ahead of anybody on this. There are some significant policy decisions that the board is going to have to make as we move forward with the regular coastal development permit, and some of those things are the impoundment basin. The third item that we discuss is the biologist from the CCSD, which is Cindy Cleveland, and from the California Coastal Commission working collaboratively together. These items, number one and three, have been discussed publicly. Ms. Dickinson has brought them up before about the ESHA, and she's brought up our biologist and the California Coastal Commission biologist working collaboratively together. So I want to make sure we're doing that. Also, I discussed with them third-party review of the existing hydrological modeling and the analysis conducted by CDM Smith relating to the 9P7 well. It was a really good dialogue with Mr. Luster, and what he's going to do is, in their correspondence as part of our SCIR, he's going to send me their concerns specifically relating to that. And when I say a third-party person, what it would be is a person evaluating the data that we already have. It would not include hiring somebody else to redo all the modeling. That's not necessary. We just want to make sure that the any concerns that the California Coastal Commission has relating to that modeling that CDM Smith did is done by a third-party peer review. So it would probably be a minimal cost, but I think these are things that we need to address early on before we go before the California Coastal Commission regarding our regular coastal development permit. Number five was engaging the California Coastal Commission staff on current work underway with the County Planning Department staff as it relates to the regular coastal development permit. We had monthly meetings. We've missed a couple. We need to get those back on track, and we also need to make sure that the California Coastal Commission staff is involved in those. And then solicit input from the California Coastal Commission staff regarding alternatives for future brine disposal. One of the things that is costly, and we all could understand and admit this, that regarding the sustainable water facility was the sampling. We've got that significantly reduced. Now the next issue that we need to address is the brine disposal. I thought one of the things that Mr. Luster suggested was, have you ever considered taking a portion of it and introducing it into your wastewater treatment plant? Essentially, that's what we're doing now. We're emptying the brine pond, which is brine, and we're mixing it with our effluent, if you think about it right now. And so what I did, I just took that concept, and I reached out to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. I sent the email to the board asking them to have a conversation with us, sit around the table with our staff and their staff, and see if this is even a viable option. But I think one of the things that could be encouraging is it could represent a significant reduction in the cost to again to run that facility, and so we do need to think outside the box. We do need to engage the California Coastal Commission staff early on and involve them in this process. So overall, I think it was a really good meeting. I'll continue to invite Madam President and Vice President Berenger and whoever else wants to be a part of that. So with that, if there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Are there any questions?
Oh, and finance managers, too. So he's here. Alan's been patiently sitting here. And
I know, and I've got questions for him, but let's start here. Director Pearson.
Mine are mostly finance also.
Good.
Are you going to be making a report, or you're here to answer the questions on the report that's in the packet? Either way.
Thank you, Board.
Okay.
The report we have is nice, but there's got to be some detail. Are we coming up with some detail here at some future time as to what exactly we overspent on and in particulars? And stuff?
Yes, and of course those are broad classifications, and I highlighted the problem areas underneath anything, for the most part, 10,000 or over, one or two that are under. That said, part of the final budget that will be presented at the August meeting, the column that's called estimated fiscal year 17-18 is going to be everything current to date. I don't want to say it'll be 100%, you know, done, say ready for audit. There still may be information coming in. I'm not aware of anything off the top of my head. We got our final property taxes, for instance, Monday, I believe, but this week, and things like that. So, you know, I'm juggling updating the information as well as working on the budget. But that column will be as current as possible, and that will have every line item account in it. So as much I don't see, you know, with the board's patience, trying to work on the budget and do as good job on that as possible, doing a separate report with the same information, I don't see a lot of benefit in that. But, yes, all that detail will be there.
Okay, and my other question regarded the property taxes, that you're saying we did get some more funding, because this report shows that we were shorted in several places.
Yes. Well, and again, that was based on year to date. Roughly, let's see, I want to say right about 50,000 more came in. The bigger fact, we came just a hair under the budgeted amount. Unfortunately, what wasn't budgeted was the county's administration fee for that. That wasn't put in the budget that I could find. So that shortfall is there. That was roughly $34,000. Spread between, you know, different departments.
Okay, so you think we're going to be within $34,000 of revenues that we were looking for?
Well, the revenue is a bit under what was budgeted, and on top of that, the decrease of revenue, $34,000. So it's going to be $40,000 to $50,000. I forget the exact amount, short of what was budgeted.
Okay.
If you include
I'll wait for August to get an explanation as to why our property taxes could possibly go down.
They didn't go down. They're just less than budgeted.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Farmer.
I'd like to make some comments on the general manager's report, if there are no other comments on the finance manager.
I don't have any comments on the finance manager. I'm trying to figure out whether the district manager is going to put up all of his slideshow or not. But you should run it as people leave. There's about...
I did the last two meetings. I put it in what they call a loop. And the last board meeting we had, we started at about 15 minutes early. This board meeting, we started about 15 minutes early. We'll do the same, all the pictures. And next board meeting, we'll do the same just for the next couple. So I'm not wasting... board has indicated they don't want me to sit here and do this. But at least the public can see. And then we also want to make sure, and we inadvertently forgot to do this today, is set up the three easels we have with the capital improvement projects. Those need to be a part of the board meeting also. So it's just a, you know, Director Farmer touched on, you know, doing a better job in educating, and I think that's just part of what staff's effort is to do right now.
And I just wanted to bring up the fact that over the last three meetings there was dozens and dozens of capital improvements that have been done in the water and wastewater, and we've already always blown it off. I don't want them to show the slides today, but you know, they're for Yeah, maybe put it on the website, maybe. But yeah, it's just that the perception that nothing's been done is can be alleviated somewhat by that. So.
Well, thank you. So let me say this, that yes, some things have been accomplished, but as is highlighted here in the second, at the end of the second paragraph of the general manager's report, there's still a lot to do, and especially the major improvements that are roughly, let's say on average, $1 million a year for the next 8 years. So whatever improvements we've made, obviously there's still a lot to do. And I also want to mention the fact that, well, one of the ways that we were able to balance the previous budget for the fiscal year was by not making any improvements to the wastewater plant. I'll move on. I want to...
And your solution? Don,
pardon me?
I was just wondering what your solution was to...
I'm not here to offer a solution. I'm making an observation. At the last paragraph here on page 118, staff conducted a PG&E kickoff meeting as part of the initial assessment for the wastewater treatment plant on Wednesday, July 18, 2018. No one on the Standing Infrastructure Committee was informed of this meeting. Now, I realize that the general manager, when he went through his went through reading his report, he said, you're going to keep the Infrastructure and Finance Committees appraised of your discussions with PG&E. And my personal opinion is I think that it would be a nice courtesy if you let us know ahead of time when these meetings were. There was a previous meeting with Brent. I can't recall. Starts with a P, his last name. Patera, thank you. There was a previous meeting with Brent Patera, and I personally got an email about it the day of that meeting, but there was no time that was included at, with regard to when that meeting was. And like I wasn't home to look at my computer, I don't to see what emails I got. I don't do it on my phone, so I had no idea that the meeting even took place until after it took place, for the most part. But the fact that you had this kickoff meeting with Brent Patera and people from the Infrastructure Standing Committee couldn't be there to hear what's being discussed, because we're the people, if anybody needs to be in the loop here, it should be us. And I think we need to, like I said, not only being given the courtesy, but I think it's mandatory if, that we have as much understanding as possible as to what is going on with regard to the operation of the district being cooperative with PG&E and vice versa. That's my humble opinion.
Okay. I can appreciate that. I think the meeting, so you referenced two meetings, and the first one, you're right, it was a meeting. You know, it's really important, first of all, the meeting that we had was strictly operational. We need to, as staff, to be able to get our arms around what needs to be done. I think there'll be plenty of opportunity for the standing committees, the infrastructure committees, to be involved in this, but I think you really have to appreciate our ability just to roll up our sleeves and sit down and brainstorm with them, and there'll be plenty of opportunities, Director Farmer, I think, for the infrastructure to be involved. But the first meeting was not, and it was strictly operational and to talk about improvements to the plan in its most general terms. So I think if you can allow us to do that. And again, we've had long standing disagreements on operational issues, and obviously we continue to have those. But I think that it was an operational meeting, and if and when the time comes, and it probably will, that the infrastructure committee is to be involved, and I'll make sure I include you.
You just talked about the fact that you did this to discuss, you know, the needed improvements. I think as a member of the infrastructure committee, we need to be as educated as possible as to what the heck is going on. And I think by not being allowed to be at that meeting as basic as it was, I think it's doing a disservice to the infrastructure committee and therefore to the community. That's my humble opinion once again.
Yeah. I think respectfully, it wasn't an issue of not allowing you to be there. Again, it was an operational meeting, and there was no intention for us to, quote, not allow you to be there. I think there are times when I think there's times when the committees have extreme value, and there's times where we just need to, you know, work as staff with the different consultants. But we can disagree to disagree, and I think that in the future I'll do a better job. But again, my position as general manager is this was an operational meeting, and it didn't really need to entail the infrastructure committee. Thank you.
There's a number of things, but I'm just going to go to one more item because I realize I'm taking up time here, and it's almost 4:30. On page 123, under water, and so there's a few areas here, and I think this is alluded to at the last regular meeting where we're discussing what has happened here. There's about, 11 items. But in like item number one, various members of water and wastewater, their names are mentioned, including wastewater plant operator John Alchin and our new water facility operator, Mr. Green. So I'm going down here, you know, and other people are mentioned as well. Larry Moore is mentioned. But I'm noticing that when it comes to the water department supervisor, and also Ben Grosskreutz is mentioned, it just says water department supervisor twice. So I see all these other names being mentioned. Is there a particular reason that Jason Buell, our water department supervisor, and who has been an employee of the district for 14 years, why it is that his name didn't get mentioned? I'm assuming that's just kind of an oversight.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to ask Jason. Jason wrote this.
well, then I better ask Jason. Yeah, I'm, yeah, not, so I'm not supposed to communicate with Jason, but no, if no, he but wrote I mean, this, then
he wrote it. So again, I
you know what? He's a humble fellow. He probably didn't want to put
exactly. His name. He wrote it. So you know, that's interesting. You bring up a good point. All these reports are actually written by the department managers or the supervisors themselves. So engineer obviously is written by director. Freudian slip there. Bob Greshens and wastewater by John. So, but I will mention to Jason, Director Farmer, that I want him to use himself as a third party more in his report. So I can do that.
He's a hardworking fellow.
Yes,
as is just about everybody out there in the field. I just want to allude that at. Thank you.
I just have one thing on the finance manager's report. It's the very last page, I believe, of the agenda packet, and it speaks to the finance committee having some significant work to do regarding budgeting policies, because if you look at the cash balances as of June 30th for the last five fiscal years, the only one where we didn't go down almost $1.5 million or $1 million was the year that we got the grant money. And we still only went up $2.4 million, and we got a much bigger grant than $2.4 million. So even if we came out of the hole by less than the amount of the grant. So, I mean, this is not a trend that can continue, and I'm sure that Mr. Labossiere sees that loud and clear too. So I'm looking forward to the finance committee looking at ways we can, hopefully this rate increase will go through and we'll have less of a deficit. Even we had a huge deficit in the SWF last year, even though we didn't spend any of the $130,000 that we had budgeted in personnel. Well, $6,000 we spent in personnel, but we still had a huge, so we need to definitely be, I'm glad we have a standing finance committee. Is there anything else besides future agenda items? Are there any future agenda items to suggest for the next meeting?
Madam President, I just wanted to throw something at the board. I don't want to throw it at the board.
I don't want you to throw anything either. Suggest I don't know if you have good
aim
or not.
Board. So the CSDA annual conference in September is the same time period as the board. So if there's any board members that want to go to that CSD annual conference, I would strongly encourage it. It's, of all the conferences, it's probably the best. I know that's kind of hard for people to fit into their schedule, but if the board would be receptive to possibly in September having the meeting a week earlier, that way it would allow you, if you want to go to that meeting, that would be great. So that would be the only item on the August that I can really think of. If it's not something that interests the board, then it's really kind of a moot point. But again, you know, as you had indicated earlier, Madam President, you know, the things that you learned there, you started out the meeting with mm-hmm. that saying that you learned, and they're invaluable conferences, and it could even be a team building type environment if it was done properly. So
it may not be the right year to be spending money on director travel.
Okay, forget that idea.
Even though we need training, and I appreciate that you are suggesting training and board building is important, but I think there's way too much going on this year. Director Pearson?
Those conferences are not as much training as they are informational and vendor related, I think, so.
This one's
I think we can pass on that one.
Yeah.
Are we going to have a closed session next in August? Okay.
Is there anything else for future agenda items? All right. You can also contact the general manager, and we can get things onto the agenda that way. It's just better if we do it by motion in public with a majority. Then we are.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, sir.
May I speak, please?
Yes, you may.
Thank you very much. There, three old sayings come to mind. The first one is, I'm speaking after the barn door has been locked and the horse has been stolen. The second one is,